Definition of run does not have any pace, right? The definition of run is to move faster than a walk. So we all can do that. So if you are run, if you can run, guess what? You're a runner. So like that's the first thing that we kind of let people know. And then the second thing is that, running is really a battle of the mind. Anybody can learn how to run. Anybody can learn the techniques and mechanisms of running, but everybody don't do that. The reason why everybody don't do that is because of the mind blocks that we have on ourselves, either self-consciously or things that we just kind of consume subconsciously, right? So it's all those stories and narratives that we tell ourselves about like why we can't do something. And most of the times what I tell these people is that, well, what if you can? What would a world look like if you could do that?
That's the voice of Martinus Evans, the founder of the Slow AF Run Club and a man whose doctor told him to lose weight or die. That same doctor laughed when Martinus told him he could run a marathon, but he's run eight since then. I'm Craig Lewis and this is the Running Tales podcast, where we tell the extraordinary stories of everyday runners. This week's conversation with Martinus Evans chronicles how he first got into running after going to get medical advice for sore hips. His 300-pound frame prompted the doctor to instead concentrate on his weight. His hip problem was more to do with how much walking he was doing during the day and nothing to do with what the doctor said was being fat. Despite facing such prejudice and further taunts along the way, Martinus completed his marathon goal. And since then, he's just kept going. As well as his own running, he's started to work with others, forming the Slow AF Run Club for those at the back of the pack and to encourage everyone to run. It's grown into a huge and hugely supportive community. And it's also seen Martinus write a book about running called Slow AF Run Club, The Ultimate Guide for Anyone Who Wants to Run. But I started our conversation by asking him what life was like before he discovered running.
Back then I was working at a clothing shop called Men's Warehouse. So I was a suit salesman. I sold suits for a living. And that's what I did, man. I was on my feet 8 to 10 hours a day selling suits. I recently just graduated undergrad. That's where I was working at. So I was on my feet, moving and shaking. I would call myself more or less a weekend warrior. So like I played basketball with friends. Our job had like this flat football league that we would do. So I did that as well. But yeah, that was what I did before, like my life changed.
At that point, were you, I believe, from having looked at a bit of your story, you were getting worried about the amount of weight you were carrying or your fitness? Is that correct, or is that not quite correct?
That is not quite correct. So basically, what happened was I went to go see this doctor because I was developing some hip pain. So, me being the size I was at, I was on my feet. Like I said, I was on my feet 8 to 10 hours a day working this job, and I developed some hip pain. So I went to go see a doctor about it, and he was like, "I know why you're in pain. Okay, well, what's going on?" And he was like, "You're fat. You need to lose weight or die." So, I'm sitting in this doctor's office, confused and angry, because it's like, I came here because I'm having hip pain. You don't know nothing about me. This is my first time meeting you, and you tell me I'm fat and I need to lose weight or die. So then, he goes on to say, well, like, you got this stomach as a pregnant woman, you need to start walking on the tracks, so all this other stuff, so on and so forth. And I found that just ridiculous because I was on my feet 8 to 10 hours a day at my job, regardless. Like, it wasn't like I had a desk job, like, I had a sales job that required me to be on my feet for this long. So when him was telling me, like, oh, you need to start walking on around the track, I was like, well, I can do one better. I'm going to run a marathon. And he laughed at me and told me that's the most dumbest thing he has heard in all his years of practicing medicine.
And just taking one slight step back from that, how did it make you feel? I mean, you've said angry, but for him to come across in such a blunt way, because even if you'd have literally been sitting down at a desk job all day doing nothing, what a horrendous way to speak to somebody who's trying to look after their health.
Exactly. So that was the thing that I was at, man. I was just very angry about the situation that, here goes another example of fat phobia or like medical malpractice or whatever you want to call it, right? Like, you can be literally sitting in the doctor's office with an eyeball falling out the socket, and you be a person of size, and it's like, oh yeah, we'll get to that eye, but let me tell you how fat you are and how the fatness in your head is pushing your eyeball out. So it just don't make sense, right? Of like, the cure for everything for a person of size can't be just lose weight.
And at that stage, were you doing any running at all? You've mentioned that you were doing basketball and so on, and obviously you were walking a lot with your work. But had running come into play at all then?
No, running was not a part of my life. Wasn't a part of my lexicon, right? But like, yeah, I walked a lot. I played basketball on the weekends. You know, like I said, my job had like this flag football thing that we did. So like, I was active, but like, was I like marathon ready active? No, but like, I was a weekend warrior. I got activity when I can. I was on my feet all day, every day anyway. So yeah, that was just how it was.
And when you came away from that appointment, obviously you've been angry, you come out with this, I'm going to do a marathon. Did you kind of think, oh my word, what have I got myself into here? Or were you actually, no, do you know what? I am going to go and do this.
Well, at one point, like, I didn't even know how long a marathon really was. So it was more or less like me being facetious and the fact of like not knowing like what the distance was. So for the longest time, I was saying, I'm going to run a 5K marathon. And it was still one of my running friends came up to me and told me like, no, Martinez, like, you got this all wrong. Like, there's no such thing as a 5K marathon. Like, there's a 5K and there's a marathon. There's two different differences. I said, okay, well, how far is a 5K? 3 miles. Oh, great. I'm thinking in my head, well, a marathon can't be no more than like 10 miles then, right? So like, how far is a marathon? It's like 26.2 miles. And I was like, whoa, 26.2 miles. So I'm doing the calculations in my head. Like, well, that's from here to the next town over, right? And it was there when I was like, all right, I'm going to do it anyway. Like, you know, I don't care what this doctor has said to me. I'm going to give it my best shot and I'm going to do it anyway.
And this might be a bit tangential, but it's just coming to my head. Were there any worries at that point that might cause you further problems with your hip? Because obviously that was the original problem, and going out and doing a ton of running might not have been the best thing to do on it.
So let's fill some plot holes there, right? Like, this is a great question that people always ask, because it did not make it into the book. And the answer to that is that I found another doctor. So I found the new doctor. He told me, oh, you have hip bursitis. This is 100% curable. This is great. He's like, yeah, you're new to this job. So like, yeah, like, you're going to be on, you've been on your feet probably longer than anybody else. So like, yes, you got hip bursitis. This is okay. Like, go to physical therapy. Went to physical therapy. And while at physical therapy, I was telling them about, you know, hey, I'm starting to run, trying to run this marathon, things of that sort. And they was like, great, do that. And they was like, do that before you come to physical therapy. So I would run before I come to physical therapy, and I would go there with any aches or pains, and they would troubleshoot it. And I did that for 8 weeks, 10 weeks, and just went on about my life afterwards.
Yeah. And how did the running feel as you started out on it, doing those first miles and presumably up to that first 5K? And how far did you
get? Yeah, so like, I ran my first 5K maybe about 10 weeks after meeting that doctor, maybe 12 weeks, 10 or 12 weeks. And I kind of just went through the journey. Like, I downloaded Couch to 5K. I did that. And then like, that's where I kind of found out like running wasn't built, or like this industry wasn't as inclusive as they thought they was, right? So for example, Couch to 5K, you know, it's like, run for 30 minutes straight. Congratulations, you ran a 5K. And I'm thinking to myself, like, who did the math on this? So you're expecting me to run a 5K, like over 3 miles in under like 10 minutes a mile? Like, what type of beginner program is that? So like, it, for me, from that point on, it took me a little bit longer to really understand, like, okay, I need more time to do this. And these programs, these training plans that I kept buying and running into, wasn't built for me. I don't know who they was built for, but I don't know why you have a beginner's program and assume that they're running a 10-minute mile.
That's a crazy program, because I know plenty of people who've been running for a long, long time. In fact, I know people who've done marathons who still can't run 10-minute miles and would never have dreamed about that when they were starting it. you know, were you ever off put off by that? Did it ever make you think, oh, this is ridiculous, it's not for me?
Yeah, a couple things, right? So I tried to hire a run coach, and no coach would take me on because of my size. So they would tell me that, you know, they are afraid to work with me because if I get injured, they'll be responsible, and they don't want to be responsible for me getting injured. So it became this thing where I got so frustrated with everything that I decided to just buy all the running books myself, read them all, and then figure out what it would look like for me to become a certified run coach. And I did that as well.
And what was the reaction from other runners to you when they saw you rock up at any events, any races, or just out running? Were people more inclusive there, or were they perhaps just as bad as some of the coaches?
Well, you know, people were racist because, you know, you got to remember, I was only doing like 5Ks at that point. So, like, people were very receptive to me because it's like, oh, good for you. Congratulations for running your 5K, right? I think there's this notion of, like, being a good fat person. Like, a good fat person is active, and they're actively trying to, like, lose weight and not be fat. And I think when people see that or assume somebody is a good fat person, they're more happy for them. Like, oh, congratulations, good job, keep going. Versus a fat person that's like, well, I'm just trying to be active, and if I don't lose weight, like, it's okay. Like, they'll look at that person like, wait a minute, what do you mean you're not trying to lose weight? You're not a good fat, you're a bad fat person, right? And they make all these assumptions about you. Like, you must be eating X, Y, and Z and ice cream and cookies when you exercise and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, that's not necessarily the case.
Yeah, I mean, the person that comes into my mind, and there's probably a few in the sport I'm going to mention of a similar build, is, you know, someone like Tyson Fury, who I know does lots of running as well. He's a huge guy. He could easily be called a fat guy by somebody else. He's clearly a fantastic athlete. He doesn't want to lose that weight because he wants to have it in the ring when he's fighting and so on. And just the idea of what an athlete looks like, what somebody who's fit looks like, it's so stereotyped, and it's kind of crazy, isn't it?
Yes, it is, especially when it comes to the sport of long distance running. They typically put, like, skinny, wiry people in long distance running because it's like, oh, that's your sport.
Yeah, and did you enjoy running straight away? Did you like it? You've done it as this challenge. You've done it despite this doctor almost. Did you actually enjoy it when you started out doing it?
I didn't start enjoying it until I ran my first race. Like, after I ran my first 5K and I got the medal, and I was like, holy crap, I get medals for this. Like, I was bitten by the running bug.
Yeah, and so from there, that obviously presumably started to go into longer distances on training, longer races and so on. How quickly did you get to that first marathon distance?
I think from the time that I met the doctor to the time I ran my first marathon was about 18 months. You know, I met the doctor in like June of 2012. So the rest of 2012, like, trained for 5K, did that, ran a bunch of 5Ks. And then did like couch to 5K, like couch to 10K bridge or something like that, 5K to 10K bridge, ran a bunch of 10Ks, ran a half marathon, trained for a half marathon, ran that. And then the new year came, and then I was like, okay, like, I'm really ready to start running this marathon, or like train for this marathon. I picked Detroit Marathon because I was like, all right, I got 10 more months to really train for this thing. And that's what I did. So I picked that one that was in October and just kind of went from there. You know, I took some time off and then started at a 10K, ran some 10Ks, built up to a half marathon, ran another half marathon, and just started to build up like marathon distance from there.
And how did the race go on the day?
Oh, I won. Like, I would say I won, but like, I finished, right? I think that was the thing, right? Is that I finished over a little bit over, it was a little bit over almost 7 hours. So I finished in like 6 hours and 45 minutes, or 6 hours and 55 minutes, something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And did you love that experience? Well, that's one question. Did you love the experience? And then secondly, did you get back in contact with that doctor?
Did I ever get in contact with the doctor? No, I never got back in contact with the doctor. And the experience is kind of bittersweet. So in my book, I write about like this story where the race like some of the race volunteers were heckling me, right? Like there was this guy in his bus and he kept telling me like, hey man, get in the car or like get in the bus, like I'll take you to the finish line. And it's like just sowing seeds of doubt versus like encouragement, right? And I guess he found that funny, like, cause he just kept doing it. Like, come on, man, get in the car, get in the car. And it's like, that's not funny and that's not helpful. So to go through that and still finish, like it was just bittersweet. Cause it was like, why did I have to go through this? But also like I did it. So let me just continue to move on with my life.
Well, you'd obviously proved that person and the doctor and so many other people wrong by doing that. Just to try and get an idea of those people's mentality or to answer some questions that other people might be thinking, was there a cutoff time for that race? Was there perhaps a reason why he may have been saying you need to speed up or drop out? Or was it purely just vindictive?
That's a good question. I don't necessarily have an answer for that. Like, I think he was just trying to be funny, right? I think he seen that as like, oh, funny, but like I did not find it right. And I think the other thing is that whenever you see a person of size, like I think that gives people the liberty to like pick on somebody, right? I think that's like the last acceptable thing to pick on somebody, right? Like is a fat person, right? So I think that's what he just did. He seen me as a person of size and he picked on me.
Because presumably he's thinking, this person should be doing more to sort out their size, like you were saying earlier. And also, he doesn't belong here. He doesn't belong in this, right, this 26.2-mile race.
Right.
And once you got over that line, did you think then, I'm going to do more running, I'm going to do more marathons? Or were you kind of like still a little bit feeling a bit separate from this sport?
At that point, I was like, this is the worst thing ever, and I'm ready to sign up for another. So like they didn't stop me, right? I think all of my inspiration and motivation is all internal. So like what people say about me and what people do to me don't stop me. Like it just actually fuels my fire to continue to keep running. So like I've always been the type of guy of like, you want to see me do something, like piss me off, tell me I can't do something and watch me do it time and time again. So it's just the fact of like, oh, okay, like, here's another person I just got to prove wrong and continue to prove wrong.
So was it more marathons after that? Was it, right, I'm getting back out there, I'm going to have another crack at this distance?
Yeah, I ran 8 marathons since then.
And I know that the other thing that you've done is you've obviously conquered these people through your own willpower, but you've also worked really hard to help other people in the same situation as you to kind of find their tribe and find that running is a good sport for you, whatever speed you are, whatever size you are, and it's all about just enjoying it and getting out there and doing it.
So yeah, that all went on to let me to create the Slow EF Run Club. You know, we kind of have now 18,000 members worldwide, almost approaching 20,000 members worldwide. And you know, it's a community to help celebrate the back of the pack, but also provide inspiration, education, and just let people know that they're not alone at these races. So, you know, our goal with all of this is to inspire 1 million people to run, to start running in the body that they have right now.
And when it comes to those people, how do you practically help them get out there? Are you now that run coach who doesn't tell people you've got to do 10-minute miles?
Yeah. So like, yes, I was like the main head coach for a while, right? So coaching thousands of people with various training plans, helping them get there, both on like a group basis and on a one-on-one basis, right? So you have coaching. The other thing that I find is that for most clothing brands, they're like, oh, we're inclusive, but they don't have clothes for larger individuals. So it's like, how can you be inclusive when you don't even have clothes to even get to the starting line? So, you know, we provide size inclusive merch. And another thing we do is just provide this community where individuals are able to talk to someone and, you know, get further attaboys, attagirls encouragement that they may not get at home. So those are things that we tangibly do inside the Slay and Front Club. And one of the things that we're working on now is we're launching in-person groups soon. So, you know, we're launching a nonprofit arm to this thing. And our ultimate goal is to be able for individuals to apply to launch their own local Slow AF Run Club in person. So like, you know, those are things that really just helps us get to our goal and our mission of inspiring 1 million people to start running.
That's fantastic. And presumably as well, we hear a lot about it's the back of the pack that actually has the most fun in these races too.
Yeah, you know, the back of the pack is worth of that, right? But I also think like, it's not the elite athletes that are really paying for these races, right? So most of the time, elite athletes don't pay. They don't pay for shoes. They don't pay for, like, they get everything for free, right? So it's not the elite athletes who are actually paying these brands and companies. It's the slower individuals who are actually paying for this stuff. So I think that for a lot of time, as we are just celebrating like super fast runners, I think that we're starting to be smarter consumers with our own dollar to say, well, if you're not going to support us and if you're not going to provide us with the stuff that we need, like we'll go elsewhere with our dollar.
And I'm seeing a pretty impressive display of running shoes and sneakers and so on behind you right now. I mean, are there preferred brands that kind of speak the same language, have the same ethos as yourself and as Slow AF Run Club?
At this moment, we're working with tons of different brands. So that's something that I'm experimenting with now to figure out like what brand may be helpful for us in our mission. I think what really was interesting is that before all of this, like I was working with Adidas for the past 2 years. So now that I'm no longer with Adidas, I kind of can explore all brands to figure out what ethos, what their gear looks like, what their shoes look like, what technology they have, so that we can try to figure out like what company, if any company, will be able to help support us in our mission.
And I'm just interested as well in practically when you're speaking to runners who are completely new to the sport, what's your immediate advice to them when they're first going out? And how do you, if someone says, oh, I'd love to do running, but I'm kind of doing, I don't know, 15, 18, 20 minute miles, this is probably not for me. How do you speak to those people?
Well, first I just let them know that it's all in their mind. And like, just starting out, like the definition of run does not have any pace, right? The definition of run is to move faster than a walk. So we all can do that. So if you can run, guess what? You're a runner. So like, that's the first thing that we kind of let people know. And then the second thing is that, you know, running is really a battle of the mind. Anybody can learn how to run. Anybody can learn the techniques and mechanisms of running, but everybody don't do that. And the reason why everybody don't do that is because of the mind blocks that we have on ourselves, either self-consciously or things that we just kind of consume subconsciously, right? So it's all those stories and narratives that we tell ourselves about like why we can't do something. And most of the times what I tell these people is that, well, what if you can? Like, what would a world look like if you could do that? And like understanding that not everything you think about yourself is true and not everything you feel about yourself is right. So getting people to really rethink about their current mindset in order to continue to start running in the body that they have now.
Yeah, and I guess we've got one or two elite runners or a lot of elite runners at the start, but the rest of us are all in this, even from the back to probably, you know, good club runners or whatever. We're all kind of just running for ourselves. No one's going to win unless we're Eliud Kipchoge or whatever like that. So it's all about yourself, isn't it?
Well, that's the thing, right? And that's something that I try to tell people is that if you're not an elite athlete, none of this stuff matters. We're all paying to participate in the race to get a participation trophy at the end of it. None of that stuff matters. Like, none of it. Nothing matters once that first wave goes off. So it's one of those things to let people know that, like you was already losing regardless. So, like, there's no need to put all that pressure on you to even think about, like, oh, I'm not running fast enough. And if that's the case, like, now you really need to think about, like, well, what am I running for? Like, am I running to have fun? Am I running to enjoy myself?
And what sort of reaction do you get from people when they start to listen to and understand that message and start to believe in themselves?
Oh, man, like it's almost like a game changer for them, because it's literally like the grass is greener, the flowers smell better, so on and so forth. Once like people really understand that, you know, you can run in the body that you have now, and it doesn't matter when you run in a race, because you're not in that first wave. So we're all just running to be, like I said, just to get a participation medal.
And as the group's grown, and I think generally across the world, as more and more people are taking up running of all different levels, standard paces, whatever, shapes and sizes and so on, has that attitude that you first encountered 10 years ago, has that changed, or do you think it's still there?
You know, there's still some gatekeepers inside of the sport of running that they'll try to hold on to, like, the old way of doing things, right? And what I usually tell those people is that they won't be around much longer, because consumers are getting smarter. And then also, like, once Gen Z has buying power, like, they're not gonna roll for the stuff that people has historically rolled for. So I think that they're either smarting up, or they just won't last, just on the fact of, like, as the older generation is getting older, and like the younger generation is starting to have buying power, like their needs and wants are completely different than what the previous generation wanted. So like you have no other choice but to change or keep up with the times, or just become a dinosaur.
Oh, I think you're spot on, and I think it's a fantastic message. I wish you all the best with it. Just before we round up, do you want to just maybe tell everybody where they can find out a little bit more about the running club and get involved with themselves if they want to?
Absolutely. So if you want to learn more about the running club, you can go to slowafrunclub.com. And we also got a book out called Slow AF Run Club, The Ultimate Guide for Anybody Who Wants to Run. You can find that wherever books are sold. And yeah, if you want to know more about me, you can just search Martinez Evans on Instagram and you'll find me there.
Fantastic. Martinez, thank you so much for joining us today on the Running Tales podcast. And thank you for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks again to Martinez Evans for joining us today on the Running Tales podcast. I hope you enjoyed our conversation as much as I did, and I think it really prompted some interesting thoughts about running, what running means to different people, and how running is a sport for absolutely everybody. I was also struck by some of the problems that Martinez faced, the prejudice that he faced, and how he managed to get through that, and the questions that it asks about how inclusive our sport really is. If you have enjoyed this episode of the Running Tales podcast, please leave us a rating or a review wherever you listen. It really, really does help other people to find the podcast, to listen to it, and to learn about people's stories like that of Martinez. Thanks again for joining me today on the Running Tales podcast, and I'll see you next week.